I'm Russ.
And I'm Shane.
We see the world through the eyes of biologists, conservationists, and bow hunters.
Welcome to the Ecological Approach Podcast.
Shaner, how you doing, buddy?
Doing good. How are you?
Not bad. Not bad. It was a hot day in the field today.
Yeah, it was.
My word. I'm glad I have my bottle of water. I wouldn't have been able to make it through without it.
Yeah. It's hot summer days.
Yeah. Yeah,
hopefully they're winding down.
Well, they are winding down. I know the nights are a little cooler now. This is going to be the first podcast that we release, and we thought that it would be best if we put a little information about ourselves out there, so you know who you're listening to. So we thought maybe the theme could be the who, what, where, when, how, and why of how the Ecological Approach podcast came to be. So, Shane, why don't you tell us about yourself?
Okay, well, my name's Shane Buttenary, and I work as an ecologist for a environmental consulting company. A little bit of history as far as my history and experience in the outdoor realm and ecological realm and that kind of thing. I grew up spending a lot of time in the outdoors. It was just always something that I had gravitated towards. I don't know exactly why. I mean, my dad got me into a lot of things. He was into hunting and fishing, since he was fairly young. So he got me into it when I was very young. And then I guess on the professional side, I decided to pursue an education in fish and wildlife at a college here in Ontario. And then I got a degree in biology from Trent University in Peterborough, Ontario. It was my exposure to the outdoors at an early age that inspired me to pursue an education in the ecological field. And then after college and university, I got a job working in this field, like I said, for an environmental consulting company. Prior to that, I had worked for a nature center at a municipal park here in Windsor. And I guess when I was young, I was more exposed to the hunting and fishing side of things, more of the recreational sportsman type outdoor activities. And then once I started working at the nature center, that really opened my eyes to the whole ecological aspect and thinking of nature as, I don't know, thinking of it more broadly, I guess, and less focused on just simply hunting and fishing and camping and stuff like that. Less of just what I'm getting out of it and more as a whole picture and how we all have a part to play, and just that we all have an impact on this global ecosystem. And then as far as my work goes, I've done quite a bit of different, a pretty broad variety of work throughout the years. I've traveled, throughout Ontario working, doing a lot of field surveys, like things like bird nesting surveys. I flew out to Newfoundland for about a month to do bird nesting surveys out there. Been up to northern Manitoba in the winter doing mammal tracking surveys. And then I've also done quite a bit of work down here in southwestern Ontario, closer to more urban centers, dealing with mitigation for development projects as well as habitat restoration projects and stuff like that. So to go along with the podcast, which is going to be fairly hunting heavy, I started hunting, I think, I forget what the exact age was. I think it was, do you know when you can get your hunting license?
I think I got mine when I was 15.
I think it's, yeah.
I was definitely younger than 16 because I remember I couldn't drive there. So I think I was 15.
I think it's 15, yeah. So I got my hunting license right away, and I shot a bow long before I could hunt. just with a kid's plastic bow when I was probably, I don't know, 7 years old or something like that. And then once I could get my hunting license, I got it right away. Like I said, I started putting a decent amount of time in hunting, but it was more of, obviously at that age, more of, you know, opportunistically whenever usually my dad could take me out. And yeah, I gained a lot of experience, but it wasn't until the last, I don't know, 5 years or so that I focused more on improving as a hunter myself, taking it more seriously, kind of changing my approach to hunting and diverging from my dad's tactics and what he taught me. And, you know, there was nothing wrong with that, but I just kind of, I think, took it a few steps further, tried to anyways. And yeah, here I am, I guess. Here we are doing this podcast about the outdoors and hunting and fishing and ecology and nature. And I think we both have a lot of experience and a lot to share in that realm. And I'm just really excited to put our thoughts out there and create discussions. And, you know, I think we can create some really meaningful discussions about ecology and hunting and just how we as people fit into this ecosystem.
I don't remember the day that I met you, but I remember around about the time I met you, you were a co-op student at Ojibwe Nature Center in Windsor. And Ojibwe Nature Center, I mean, it's just this incredible place in Windsor, Ontario, that it's just been a stepping stone for so many young naturalists. And that's where I met you. And I can remember my first impression of you was you were wise beyond your years. You were showing me plants and shrubs and identifying them. And I remember thinking to myself, because I don't know how old you are right now. You're about 30?
30.
So I'm 12 years older than you. So I guess I'd probably been 25, which would have made you, I don't know, how old would that have made you? 13, 14?
I guess Well, no, I think I started there when I was, I want to say 15. I did a co-op in grade 10.
I would have been 15. About 27, and that's about right. And I can remember thinking, wow, this kid's really bright. He really has a good eye and watches things. And I was always impressed by that. And we've been friends ever since. It's a long time ago.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a little bit about myself. Russ Jones. I was born and raised in England until I was 8. I've been a nature nut since I was a kid. The one thing I always wanted to see when I lived in England was a grass snake. I never did see one, but it wasn't through lack of searching. And my mom and dad always fostered. I have two brothers, so there's three boys, and then my mom and my dad, and they always encouraged us and helped us with whatever passions we were pursuing. Both of my brothers were more athletic and sporty, or I guess more competitive is probably a better word for it. I was always in the bush looking for snakes and flipping rocks and fishing. And even for my birthdays, the only thing I ever wanted for my birthdays was field guides. You know, I just wanted the full set of the Audubon field guides. I wanted every reference book I could possibly get, still to this day.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, it sounds like things haven't changed too much.
They haven't. And I haven't changed much at all. I feel exactly the same as I did when I was a kid. So nature and being outdoors, it's always sort of been more of who I am than what I do and what I like. It's just me. And anybody that knows me knows that about me. So it was a natural thing that I would, also pursue an education in the outdoors. I went to the Sir Sanford Fleming College and took the Fish and Wildlife program there, same one that you took, and got my hunting license when I was 15. Nobody in my family hunted. I had a couple of friends that hunted, and we were all very young and went out and did a lot of duck hunting and rabbit hunting. Did some pheasant hunting, and just had a great time chasing small game. Always had aspirations of going deer hunting, but didn't know anybody that could teach me or show me the ropes or anything like that. And down here in Essex County, of course, there's there's no public land, and you gotta know someone to get in on anywhere to hunt. And when you're a young boy and you don't know too many people, that was difficult to do. So I stuck with the small game and for years and had a blast with it and loved it and just used shotguns. I didn't use a bow back then. But then I met Shane, and Shane was just over the moon for archery. Just loved it. I mean, just lived it and breathed it all the time.
Yeah, it's been a constant passion in my life. There's been times where I've done more of it and less of it when I was away at school, and I look back at it now and I wish I would have taken the opportunities, taken more advantage of the opportunities while I was there, because, you know, you can always make spare time when you're in school, and I really should have done more. But it was, you get caught up in the college and university life and hanging out with friends, and I don't know, it was just bringing bows back and forth, finding somewhere to hunt that I wasn't familiar with. But I really wish I would have taken more advantage of that. And I do want to mention that, talking about when we met, you have also always been a very big inspiration and a constant source of knowledge as far as nature and ecology goes. Like you said, you're 12 years older than me, and you and another friend of our mutual friend of ours, I'd heard you guys went to the same that college, Sir Sanford Fleming, and took the Fish and Wildlife program, it was definitely a big inspiration that, you know, made me decide to follow that myself. So I don't know if I ever mentioned that or thanked you for it, but
well, no need to thank me. I think we've both sort of influenced each other, you know, in some ways, and I think that's what good friends do. And you've done the same for me with archery and bow hunting.
Nature and the outdoors, it just has people that are really into it, there's just a sort of a natural connection, I guess.
And this area that we're in has a really cool little group of people, you know, all our buddies that are all environmental type, or let's say outdoors people. And we're lucky that we've, I guess, found kindred spirits in extreme southwestern Ontario, which, I mean, arguably, maybe not even arguably, maybe obviously, is probably the most unhunter-friendly area of the entire province and possibly the entire country.
And has some of the lowest amount of green space out of anywhere else in the province or country probably as well.
Yeah.
But what is here is quite significant, rare, unique. And I think it's interesting too that we both had a passion for nature and the outdoors as young people. And
that's the innate in us. I wasn't inspired by anybody as a kid.
Yeah.
That was just where my heart went, where my interests went, where my eyes went. You know, nature shows on TV. It didn't take me long when I moved to Canada to figure out that channel 56 and 32 were where I'd find my nature shows. And I just, every once in a while, I'd get on 56. No nature shows. 32. No nature shows. I'm back outside. And I don't think you pick a passion for nature. I don't think you choose that.
Yeah.
I think it just happens.
I did have some influence and inspiration and stuff like that, like I said, from my dad, but I definitely just had that innate interest as well, because I've got two siblings, a brother and a sister, and neither one of them are quite, I mean, my brother is quite the opposite. He's not really into it at all. My sister she's into it, maybe not to the same degree, but yeah, it's interesting. And when I think about it now, a lot of times when I get outside as a 30-year-old adult, the best way I think I can describe the feeling sometimes is just almost a childish joy, you know?
Yeah, I do know. Yeah. I'll talk about my brothers for a sec too, because my younger brother, I'm the middle of the three. We're all pretty close in age. We're all within 4 years of each other. my younger brother, he appreciates the outdoors. Like whenever we go on vacation, he's out there looking for the snakes and lizards and all the local wildlife that we wouldn't get to see back home. My older brother is not so much. He was always, he's a tremendous athlete, exceptionally good runner. And he played football and all of the other competitive things that, an athlete, competitive person would do. And in a twist of fate, last year, he decided to get into deer hunting. So I feel like even though we didn't have a ton in common when we were kids, we always, like my brothers and I have always had great relationships, but we didn't have a ton in common because I was extreme into the outdoors and my older brother was extreme into competitive sports. And then my younger brother was sort of a mix between the two and you know, he could kind of get along with us both pretty good. But my older brother decided that he wanted to try deer hunting. And so I am so excited to be able to share some hunting time with them. And, maybe I can teach him a few things about ecology while we're out there. And that's, I'm actually pretty thrilled about that.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Very looking forward to it.
If there's one thing I think that has the potential to create lasting relationships and, a really pretty like intense and unique bonding experience, it is hunting. And I think that probably goes back, way back into our genetics, but also it's just, it's the hard work. It's the taking the life of an animal with another person and sharing those emotions. And then it's also bringing that sustenance, that meat back and sharing it with them and with your family. And yeah, it is. It's a very unique and very cool bonding experience between people.
It certainly is. It's when you've got a goal and you got to make plans and you're poring over maps and you're sort of strategizing. It's even going hunting and not getting a deer, let's say, or even duck hunting and not getting a duck. It doesn't matter that much. It's the adventure and it's the camaraderie and it's the experience and the memories and the sights. You might not have a duck come into your decoys at all, but maybe a mink goes cruising by or a heron comes in and doesn't see you in the blind. That's all part of it for me. That is all part of the experience.
Yeah. It's getting stuck in your truck and in some mud on a dirt road. That seems like terrible experience at the time, but those are the things that you think back on years and years later and you still laugh about them. It's like those, it's just experiences, right? It's shared experiences.
Yeah. So, I think that, that's a nice little summary of who we are and how we got to where we're at. I'm going to actually talk about one more thing. I kind of got to the point where we had met and you sort of inspired me to take up bow hunting. And then you became a mentor. You really went well out of your way to show me how to do it properly. And so I'm coming into this podcast not as an expert bow hunter or even a very experienced bow hunter. I'm coming into it as an avid bow hunter that is here to learn from somebody that has a lot more experience than I do. And that is Shane. So I'm looking forward to that very much, but what I can bring to this podcast is a lifetime of experience outdoors as an avid amateur naturalist and as a professional biologist alike. Shane and I actually worked together for 10 years on a big project as endangered species researchers. So we've got quite a bit of time in the field together. But as far as this podcast goes, the expert hunter here, the expert bow hunter is definitely Shane. And so as we go through, you might hear me asking questions that, I'm here to learn too. Anytime I can ask questions to somebody that knows more than I do, no matter what subject, I'm going to take the opportunity.
Well, what you lack in bow hunting experience, I think you really make up for in just your overall knowledge and experience in nature and ecology and the outdoors. I mean, I don't think, sure, there might have been a small bit of luck that played into your successful last season, your very first season out, your very first sit, which, you know, that story might come on a future podcast, but I don't think it was completely luck. I think, you've spent how many decades, observing wildlife, being around white-tailed deer, you know, observing their habits, behaviors, biology. You know, I think that really plays a big part in your hunting success. And I think that those woodsmanship skills, whatever you want to call them, I think those skills are maybe being lost a little bit, or maybe it's not the focus, in popular bow hunting that maybe it should be. I think a lot of it focuses on, you know, which is not a bad thing. I think archery, I think fitness, I think having the right gear is important, but I think a lot of people skip the steps of just spending time in the outdoors, in nature, observing wildlife, and just learning, you know, learning the behavior of the game that you're pursuing. And I think that's where I always said, when you didn't, before you started deer hunting, I always said, I wish you would get into it so that because I know you would come at it from a different perspective than most people, and I know you would have some unique insights. And sometimes it's the people without that previous bias of, you know, popular hunting media and stuff like that. It's nice to not have that bias because you come at it with a different approach. And I know we're going to learn from each other back and forth as we progress in this. So.
As we have been doing for the last 15 years. Okay, Shane, so that's who. Let's talk about the what. What is this podcast going to be about? The ecological approach doesn't really nail down. I mean, maybe if somebody just hears that, they're going to say, well, what is this about?
Yeah, and if we're just being honest about it, we had a difficult time nailing down a name for this. And I think it was because, well, we wanted to encompass a lot of different factors, a lot of different viewpoints. You know, we really wanted to, we're both very passionate about bow hunting, but we wanted it to be more than that. We wanted it to encompass you know, other outdoor activities, but also thinking about hunting and thinking about your place in the ecosystem, you know, just being aware of it and contemplating it and thinking about it, because, you know, we don't pretend to have all the answers or anything like that, but I think just having an open mind and thinking about those kind of things, like how you fit into this, how you fit into the food chain, how you fit into the ecosystem, where we come from, where our species is going, you know, like that's the kind of stuff that I think we need to, it's not talked about enough, I guess. And, I don't know. I think it'll just be interesting to dive into that aspect of hunting in the outdoors.
In some senses, on planet Earth today, I think humans have somehow, some way, maybe not fully, but I feel like on some level, become separate from the ecology of the planet. I don't know. I don't know how to articulate that. But I don't feel the same as a wolf out hunting in the bush. I feel separate from that. I think a lot of people feel that. But when you're hunting, like, what is ecology, first of all? Ecology is interactions of all the different species that are inhabiting the area. When you're out hunting, you become part of the ecology of that site, rather than the typical human presence, which is the agent of disturbance, or the casual observer. If you're out there hunting, you are part of the ecology. You are a predator now in this habitat.
Yeah, and I think you could say not even just hunting, every outside of hunting, every part of every day of your life, you're part of ecology. I mean, I think, like you said, I think we've started to feel like we're, a lot of people are separated from nature, separate from the natural ecosystem. And even a lot of people who, you know, environmentalists and stuff like that who look at the destruction that humans have caused, natural destructions. I mean, I'm not saying it's a good thing that we do that, but at the end of the day, we are part of, humans are part of the ecosystem.
We are. And you could use that as a cop-out that dismisses us for all of the things that we do that are harmful to our planet, our habitat. Or you could use it as motivation to fix some of the things. Like, at the end of the day, it depends what you want. Are you here just for you, or are you here for the next generation? Those aren't the same things. Because if you're here for the next generation, you're going to tread a little lighter. You're going to use a little less. You're going to be a little more gentle, and things like that. So I guess we, as usual, strayed a little bit. You're going to hear that a lot because that's what we do. But what is this podcast about? That was the initial question. It's going to be about hunting. It's going to be about outdoors. It's going to be about all sorts of outdoor pursuits. It's going to be about nature, ecology. If we can have a guy on that's an expert on muskie fishing in Lake St. Clair, I welcome that discussion. I would love to talk about that. If we're going to have a vegan on that has a big problem with hunting, if we can have a respectable discourse, I welcome that. If we can, you know, anybody that has anything to do with the outdoors and ecology and nature, I want to talk about it here. But it's going to be heavy on the hunting. It's going to be heavy on the bow hunting for white-tailed deer specifically. And it's going to be heavy on ecology and nature. And we're both naturalists, we're both biologists, and we're both bow hunters. And the fact of the matter is, this is what we talk about every day anyways. The only difference is now we have microphones in front of us. This is not too far from a discussion that we would have on a normal day in the field.
That's the truth. That is the truth. And then along with it, I think just a neat little introduction to each one of our episodes. We're going to highlight some sort of nature sighting or some sort of outdoor sighting that we've seen that week. And that'll be an interesting little.
I hope we get people sending in questions and comments that we can respond to and answer.
Sending in their own observations.
Send in a photo or an observation. We'd love to share all that. I'm always interested to hear what's going on out there. Who, what, where? We're located in southwestern Ontario. We're talking from my house in Amherstburg, Ontario, right now. But frankly, I'm interested in anything outdoors anywhere. I'm sure it'll sort of tend towards Canadian content and specifically Ontario content. But hey, if somebody wants to come and talk about game hunting in Africa, let's talk. That sounds interesting. When? We're going to shoot for weekly.
Yep.
And maybe that's a tall order. We're both new to this. Let's just get that out there. We came into this not knowing a thing about audio recording. Neither one of us are techie. I found it's weird. A lot of nature-y people and outdoor people aren't techie. Some are. It's not a rule. But it seems to be something of a generalization, at least in the circle of people. Maybe it's just a circle of people I hang out with.
Well, I fit that.
You fit it perfectly. And so do I. So we're fumbling our way through this, and we've got some pretty good sound, I think, at this point. You be the judge. Let us know. But we are going to try to bring you guys something weekly. And if we miss a week here and there, we'll let you know. I know Shane's getting married here shortly. That may very well be a week that we miss. But we're sure going to give it a try.
Yeah, try to give updates from during the hunting season, updates from the field, some of our observations, go over some of our hunts.
How are we going to accomplish this? I feel like that how isn't really a valid question in this situation, but I guess I'll just sort of review the format that we have in our mind. That, of course, is subject to change. We're pretty informal people, to be perfectly honest. So sometimes there'll be guests. Sometimes it'll be just us. Sometimes we'll have, you know, great stories to share. Sometimes we're always going to have some kind of a sighting or experience that we're going to share with you guys. We just mentioned, hopefully we get some engagement from people listening and we can share some of those discussions as well. And of course, we have social media as well. We have a Facebook account, the Ecological Approach Podcast, and we also have an Instagram account. So you, if you guys want to get a hold of us, you can get in touch through those avenues, and we'll always be there to answer.
Yeah, and I encourage everybody to, you know, engage, follow us on Facebook and Instagram. You know, subscribe, like, follow the podcast. All of our listeners, you know, you guys are really going to make this podcast, and we appreciate anybody that tunes in, that listens, that provides feedback. We really appreciate all of that, because that's what's going to make this podcast. And you know, at the end of the day, we enjoy this, but we want to improve other people's knowledge and just have an open discussion about these topics as well. So,
which brings us to the final question: why are we doing this? I saved this one for last. Well, because it just falls last when you say who, what, where, when, how, why. But also because I think it's one of the most important ones. I'll start this one. I mean, just the love of nature. I see around me, I see a disconnect. I see a disconnect between the general, and I know this is a generalization, but between the general public and nature in our times, there's a disconnect there. Kids aren't going outside like they used to. Parents aren't, you know, spending as much time teaching their kids to hunt or fish, or there just seems to be less people appreciating nature. There's also a disconnect between a lot of times hunters and environmentally minded people, or, well, let's just have it, hunters and environmentalists. I've got lots of friends that are environmentalists, and I've got lots of friends that are hunters. And frankly, I don't understand where that disconnect comes from, because I just think they're all great people to hang out with, and we have so much more in common than not.
Yeah, I've always found that to be strange, that disconnect between, well, I think there might be more of an overlap than maybe we think. And I think the people that are the most vocal and the ones that are the most that stand out the most are those sort of extreme people on either end. They're the ones who make the most amount of noise, you know.
Yes.
You know, the ones, the extreme end, the environmentalists who, you know, think all hunters are bloodthirsty killers that just kill for fun. And then you've got, you know, the other end who, you know, you've got some hunters that that really, well, they don't, I don't know if they disagree with the environmentalists, because it's just they feel like they're being attacked, so they have to disagree.
I feel like there's a lot of skepticism with, in this day and age, with science and with data, and people just seem to want to, a lot of times, just believe what they want, and whether something is factual, backed by science, backed by data, backed by actual observation, it doesn't seem to matter as much as it used to. People dig their heels in on all sides, and really, we probably should be communicating more and talking more respectfully.
Yeah, and I think, honestly, we have to put it on ourselves. I think it takes a disciplined mind to be open-minded, you know, to not get caught in that trap of being in a so-called echo chamber of, you know, people on social media that attract like-minded people, and they don't get outside influences to create that healthy discussion. And they, you know, they're just hearing their own voice or, you know, the people around them that have the exact same opinions. And it's easy to get sort of caught in that trap, but I think you have to, like I said, have almost a disciplined mind to be able to realize consciously what's going on, and realize that, you know, just because people disagree or they may have a different opinion, it doesn't always mean they're wrong, and you have to let those you know, I always think no matter what opinion people have, you should let it bounce around in your head for a while, at least. At least let yourself digest it. At least let yourself contemplate it before you come up with an you know, an opinion on their opinions. So yeah, hopefully this is a place where we can kind of meld both sides of that spectrum and, you know, hopefully start to mesh those. And I think as much as we see it going in opposite ways, I think at the same time, I see more and more people being attracted to hunting that are not your typical hunters or that don't come from a typical hunting background. Like, I think you are getting more people who are environmentalists, and maybe they were vegans because they were against, you know, against factory farming and the popular meat industry. And, you know, so they became a vegan to not support that. And,
I mean, well, it's a horror show. The meat industry is a horror show. People are waking up to that. And I mean, I buy meat from the store still, but do I ever feel better about eating meat when it's a deer that I shot?
Yeah. You know, yeah. And some of those
ethically,
people are,
I don't think there's a comparison there. Not everybody can go and get a deer. So I'm not preaching, hey, everybody should go and get a deer. There is not enough deer for everybody to go out and get one. But if it's something that, you know, you're considering doing for ethical reasons, I would say that is a really good reason to want to get into hunting. I heard someone else say once, a hunted deer has one bad day. Well, how many bad days does a meat cow have in a factory? And it probably doesn't have any good days. And that always stuck with me. Bridging these gaps between people, just having respectful discussion. I had mentioned before, if we get someone on here that is opposed to hunting, I promise you that if you wanted to sit down and talk with us, I'm not going to argue. I'm happy to have the discussion. I'm happy to agree that we have different outlooks on life. I'm not going to try to change your mind, and you can try to change my mind, and you probably won't on hunting, but if somebody can change my mind, that I love that. That is great. If you're so convincing and you come at me with, you know, and I'm set on a particular opinion and you can change my mind, that is a good discussion. That is a productive discussion. I'm leaving there happy. That's great. No, I learned something. It opened my mind. I've got a new perspective. Yeah, I appreciate that and I respect that.
It's a worthwhile discussion if it completely shakes your own viewpoints and values and, you know, and it makes you really question things, then I think that's the best kind of discussion there is.
But those discussions are only possible with an open mind and with some tolerance and with some understanding that not everybody feels the same way about everything. There's different ways of looking at things. Some of the other things, or I guess some of the other reasons why I think it's important that we do this, there's some pretty serious environmental issues facing humanity that have been developing over, well, I guess since the industrial age. Global warming is one we hear about all the time. One of my biggest fears, one of my biggest concerns, I guess is a better word, is the global crash of biodiversity. I mean, we are the cause of a mass extinction event on a scale, you know, that rivals any mass extinction of the past, including the extinction of the dinosaurs, and species are blinking out before we even know they existed in some cases. So we're not going to be talking on a podcast and fix these problems. But if we talk about some of these problems and we can enlighten some people to some of these issues and just to maybe inspire some people to just love nature and just want to protect it, I think it's good to have these discussions. I think it's good to talk about it. I think it's good to talk about solutions. I think it's good to talk about what we're doing to cause this, and we're all part of the problem. I try to live small and have a small footprint, but I know I'm still part of the problem. We all are. We can't get away from it, but we can all make little steps. One of the episodes that I have in my mind that I'd like to do in the future is naturalizing part of your backyard, creating a little habitat for even just for insects and pollinators and small animals in your backyard. I think if even, you know, any measurable percentage of the population did something like that, a lot of our problems with fragmentation and biodiversity collapse, you know, it would help that. So having a podcast, if we can get a following and have some good passionate discussion, hopefully we can address some of these issues and be part of the solution.
Yeah. I mean, we're all, as humans, we're all consumers. You can't get away from that. But just being aware, having an awareness of your impact is important. And I think as hunters, as naturalists, we see that firsthand. Maybe more so than somebody living, in a urban center. And I know we've talked about this before, but a lot of the reason that we want to protect our natural places and, hopefully lessen the curve of this biodiversity collapse is not necessarily to save the planet, because like I said, we've talked about this before, Russ, that the planet really is going to be fine with or without us. You know, it'll rebound long after humans are gone. But, you know, we have to think about future generations. I know you've got kids, Russ. I don't, but maybe I will someday soon. And something that we have to discuss, we have to talk about as a community, because, you know, our actions today can influence the life and the state of our environment, you know, for future generations, for our kids. And that's really important. I would hate to see my kids not have the opportunities to experience nature, go outside, see the wildlife, you know, have clean rivers and lakes to be able to fish in and eat fish from, and you know, just see the amazing biodiversity of insects, wildlife, plants that are out there right now.
I have a little story about that. When I was young, I think I was probably about 10 or 12 years old, I found a Massasauga rattlesnake in Windsor, and it was a little remnant population that was living in this little prairie area, and it was a significant find. And some experts came down and took a look, and they came and they found some, and it was this little tiny population of Massasauga rattlesnakes that had hung on miraculously. That population's gone now. There's no more Massasaugas there. That's one of the sites that we survey regularly for other species of snakes, and Massasaugas haven't been recorded there in pretty close to two decades, I would say now. And it's not that big of a site, and they're not that difficult to find, so it's safe to say that they're gone. There's one more little relic population in a neighboring town, and we've been back there, you and I. We've found Massasauga rattlesnakes back there, and we've taken photos of them. We've helped some of the biologists that are doing their studies. I mean, I've even radio tracked them at this other population. And it looks like they may very well have blinked out too this summer. Last summer, the biologists working on it found a couple, I think. And this year, nothing. The population estimate is like one or two individuals. So that will be the end of Massasauga rattlesnakes in southwestern Ontario.
And that was within your lifetime. That was before your very eyes. That
watched it happen. It breaks my heart. It's Aldo Leopold had a I mean, while his Sand County Almanac is just full of poignant quotes, actually, I'm going to recommend folks read that, A Sand County Almanac by Aldo Leopold. But in it, one of the quotes that I always remember is, and I'm not going to get it verbatim here, but I'm going to give you the idea. The person with an ecological background lives in a world of wounds, and I feel that, you know, that hits me. Like I feel like this little hardware store that's being built on this spot here. It's just a weedy field, right? There's nothing, but you and I both know that was a patch of prairie dock, an S1 critically imperiled plant, and they bulldozed the entire field to put a hardware store there. We could sit here and rattle off 30 or 40 different instances where something like that's happened.
Yeah. And that's a case where you can say ignorance is bliss in a way. You know, the less you know, the less you know what is being destroyed. And man, when you're talking about those Massasauga rattlesnakes, those two populations, man, that really hits home.
It hurts. It really hurts. It breaks my heart.
When you see those populations, you know, you hear about these populations declining of different endangered species around the world, and you read about it in National Geographic or on the news, and you feel it, you know, but you think, it's far away. What can I do? You know, it's you feel it when it's on TV or you hear it on the radio or on the internet, whatever. You feel it for that, you know, while you're reading it, maybe half an hour after, but you know, eventually it kind of fades away in your mind most of the time. But when you physically see two populations of an endangered species go from, you know, they weren't ever very numerous, but when you see two populations completely disappear in front of your eyes, that's tough. It's tough to, it really makes you contemplate things. Makes you think.
We have an Endangered Species Act. I mean, these animals are protected by law, and yet, you know, even under this law that was supposed to protect them, they just needed more land. The law didn't allow them more land, and the pressures were too great, and all of the pressures were human induced. Like there were, you know, it wasn't a natural thing. This was just habitat loss, fragmentation, you know, getting run over, not managing habitat, introduced invasive species of plants, making the habitat unsuitable and things like that. And, you know, here's in a selfish way. Okay. Obviously it's a piece of the ecology gone. It's a piece of our natural heritage gone. But some of my fondest memories as a child was finding Massasauga rattlesnakes. I mean, that's how I spent my childhood, taking out master's students so that they could mark them and I'd join along. And you know, this lit the fire under me that made me who I am today. I can't do that with my kids.
Yeah, that experience
that's gone.
Is robbed from the next generation.
Yeah, it's gone. And it is incredibly difficult, both in terms of politically and actually biologically, to reintroduce these things. I mean, it's almost not even feasible to do because there's no will to do it. Government agencies aren't interested in it. Citizens aren't interested in it for the most part. There's a few out there that are, but by and large, nobody really wants Massasauga rattlesnakes released back where they were. And they are gone, and it is a tragedy. And
yeah,
it happens every day, and it happens all the time. And there just needs to be more appreciation for nature and for ecology and for our wild neighbors and for our natural heritage.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And another example of that, you know, not exactly in line with it, but in our specific municipality, there aren't any laws about cutting trees down. A lot of municipalities across Ontario there are, and a lot of places there are. but there aren't here. And it's happened many times where, you know, I might see a big old oak tree and it might be on private property, but every day on my drive to work, I'll look at that tree and I'll appreciate it, you know, and I can actually say that it makes my day better. You know, it has an impact on me physically and mentally, just driving past and looking, you know, awestruck at this 200-year-old oak tree that's on someone's private property. Now, that person is free to cut that tree down at their own will whenever they want to. And, you know, I'm not saying you should take away the rights of landowners or anything, but I'm just trying to get the point across that that tree is more than just that landowner's. It's more than just that landowner's. It's more than just that person's. It's a piece of natural history that the entire community, you know, can appreciate
and benefits from. It provides a service for all of us as well.
Yeah, and it's been standing there for 200 years. And, you know, if somebody could buy a piece of property, own it for a year, cut the tree down, sell it, and move away. And, you know, that's something that's taken away from the natural history of the entire community.
And let's face it, that oak could have lived another 200 years. So how many generations now have been robbed of that tree? I agree. I can remember when the city of Windsor proposed, a permit system for tree cutting. And it was just laughed right out of City Hall, and it never went anywhere. It never even passed the first meeting because it was just an outcry. I'm with you. Hey, property owner's rights, you know, that is the society we live in. And, it is what it is. It's got its good and it's got its bad, but it's a pretty good system. People buy property, it's theirs, but it's not theirs to do with as they please. We have restrictions. You can't just dump toxic chemicals on your private property. There's restrictions on that. You can't necessarily even build a house. You know, there's permits and there's different things you got to do. And maybe you're too low and you're in a floodplain and they just won't allow it. There are restrictions. There should be a restriction on tree cutting. And you know, I agree with you. It is a natural heritage feature that belongs to everybody. And if you're a property owner, you are a steward of that property until the next owner comes along. That is all you are. You're just a steward of that. You shouldn't wreck it and ruin it and take all the topsoil off and fill it with fill and gravel. You know, there's too little left. There's too little left to be treating areas like that. But these are all, you know, issues that come up. And these are all little reasons why I think this podcast is important.
Yeah, creating that discussion, just having an awareness, you know, that some of these things are part of our sort of collective natural history as humans, you know, and being a good steward of the land, how important that is. You know, if you want to read about land stewardship, like you said, one of the best places, one of the best books that I know of is Aldo Leopold's Sand County Almanac. And he words things just really great in there. But, you know, I remember one chapter that talks about a tree that was cut down, and it goes through the growth rings and what was happening in that period of time. As they go through the growth rings, you know, the first time an electric light bulb was turned on the landscape and that tree saw that, you know, the first time, you know, whatever it might be, the first car that drove down a road, that tree was there to see that. And it's just sad, in my opinion, to be able to cut down that tree in the span of 5 minutes, not even 30 seconds with some of the machinery we have today. And, you know, we don't think twice about it. But, you know, we're not here to judge, though. We're not saying you know, it's always wrong to cut down trees, what's right or what's wrong, but just having that, being conscious of that and weighing things out in the back of your mind is important, and not just going by what, other people tell you or other people or people's opinions or something like that, you know,
or, but, the, or the status quo, you know, the status quo is what got us here now with all these problems. And, you know, it's the way we're going, it's not sustainable, you know, in so many facets, it's not sustainable. Status quo is not going to do. We need to change things. We need to do better. We need to be more aware, and we need to enlighten ourselves.
Yeah, and we don't want this to be, you know, we don't want to bring everybody down with some negativity, you know, towards destroying the environment and stuff like that. But it's a reality, and it's something that you should always be aware of, and it's thought provoking, you know. And there's also great things going on in the world today. Like, you know, I think we're also realizing how important natural spaces are in communities, and as far as urban planning goes and stuff like that, I think we're getting better at preserving natural spaces and intertwining them into communities, and you know, having that plan in place before the development starts. And you know, we're making progress as well. Like, we've worked on a project that's has been pretty remarkable. I think both of us will say it's had a significant impact on our lives, and it's a huge habitat restoration project. I mean, there was some destruction in the beginning, but you know, we get to see the sort of the fruits of our labor over a decade of labor that we've put into this project, and to see how far it's come, stuff like that is super encouraging.
It is. And let's face it, I mean, the human species is a remarkable thing. I mean, God, we're self-aware of the universe and ourselves and our place in it, and we know the things that we need to improve on. I mean, we are a really special organism. We are very unique, very special, and very wonderful. And you know, we come with some baggage, but I don't think it's anything that we can't overcome. When we want to do something, we can do it. It just takes the will, and it takes being aware of what needs to be done. So let's talk about it.
Yeah. So if these are the kind of discussions that you know, you want to get involved in, and you want to hear about, just encourage you to tune in. I mean, we're gonna talk a lot about hunting and specific techniques and gear and stuff like that, but we're definitely not afraid to get into the contemplation of how we fit into the universe type talks as well. I think we both get a bit of a kick out of that, and sometimes we get carried away with it. But at the end of the day, it's all just fun discussion, and gets the brain working, get the wheels going, and yeah.
That's it. If you like the sound of that, tune in, because there's plenty more to talk about. Have a good night, guys.
See you later.